Hey everybody, I'm Chris.
I'm Steven.
We like board games.
And beer.
We decided to pair them. We think you should too. Welcome to
Table Hops!
So everybody, we are on our way back.
No
weird voices.
That's my normal voice.
That was not your normal voice.
Hello everybody.
That was your, like, your weird fake Waluigi voice.
Wow.
So we are on our way back from Gen Con. How are you guys feeling?
Good. Tired?
Yeah.
Good.
Chilling.
Yeah. Did y'all have fun?
I had a blast.
Me too.
Had a blast. So Angel, are you just going to be a regular on the podcast now? Or are you auditioning for Chris's job?
Oh,
it's easy
I mean,
to take.
Yeah. Only during con season.
That works. I had a really good time. It was really overwhelming and I'm very tired.
Yeah.
My feet, my butt, my hips, and my legs hurt.
Your butt?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I was doing that wrong.
Well, to be fair, like, when you're doing that much walking, you're not used to walking.
No, not used to walking at all.
So, you had an interesting experience, Chris, with this being your first time.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to stay downtown the first time.
Yes.
So, what did you think about being able to walk across the street to the con?
That was nice.
Yeah.
Didn't have to worry about going outside and traffic and dealing with all that. It was just nice to just be able to walk right across the sky bridge.
Now, did you do any, like, go back to the hotel in the middle of the day type things, or were you just out?
There was two times when I went back just to drop shit off.
Yeah.
And then just to fall in the bed and die for about 20 minutes.
Gotcha.
Before you had to race across campus to your next event.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was.
And then, Angel, you had VIG.
I did.
Which gave you access to the lounge and bag drop. Did you use the bag drop at all?
I am a dumbass and I did not use the bag drop at all.
What's okay. The bag drop?
I can just literally just take my stuff and be like, hey, can you hold this for me and I'll come pick it up later.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Which is like, because honestly, taking stuff back to a hotel room really wasn't that bad.
No.
But not having to leave the actual ICC would have been great.
It was like, if I was way deep in the vendor hall, it would take me about 15, 20 minutes to get back to the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's not a big deal at all.
It saves half an hour.
But if you've got something going on, you know.
Right.
And especially, you know, playing the elevator lottery.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The will call was awesome, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The will call, yeah, that was awesome.
So, Chris, do you want to recap everybody on your events, how you got your events?
Like, you mean the physical tickets for them or something, or?
Well, so, on the way down.
Yes.
You decided that, I should look into some other events.
Yeah, I should probably look and see where we're going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I signed up for a couple events, and I had to pick them up at will call along with my generic tickets.
Yeah.
And when we got there, the line was hella long. And then as the night went on, it got hella longer.
Right.
Until eventually it was outside.
Yeah,
and
so
we were talking about how after, like, midnight or two, it would calm down a little bit.
Yep.
It did not. It did not.
Yeah, so everyone, there were plenty of people that had issues traveling in, whether by car or by plane.
Oh, yeah, all those flights got canceled.
Yeah, a bunch of flights got canceled. A bunch of accidents were on 65, which slowed people down significantly. So I think everyone was getting in and had the same idea of, I'm going to get this done on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
but we went back there.
We went back Thursday morning.
Well, yeah, like 7 or 8 in the morning, and it was like, no way.
Yeah.
It's like, there you go.
Yeah, and I picked up my press bed, which I had always been told was, there's going to be some crazy line that takes like an hour, whatever. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to get there when they open.
Uh-huh.
And I got there, and there was nobody there. And I was like, was there a line earlier? Because I was like 10 minutes late. And they're like, no. We opened the doors and there was no one here.
No one here.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well,
good thing we got up early.
what else did we do that morning? You had events that morning, right?
Yeah, I had that 3D classic dungeon crawl in the morning.
Oh, right.
Which was D&D first edition. Much different than it is now. And I didn't remember how much different it was until I played.
Now, why was it called a 3D Dungeon Adventure?
So this guy, I forgot his name. It's one of my many business cards I have in my backpack. He's created this 3D, like, I don't think it's styrofoam, but it's like, or it's probably like wooden planks nailed together with dry erase tiles all over the bottom of it. So it's like this castle layout for miniatures. And he had so many miniatures, like the big pewter ones from like back in the day, and he had every single one from the old Dungeon Master guy.
Oh, no way.
So his table, those long tables that run in the playroom,
yeah.
The first, like, two of those was the dungeon, and then the rest of it was just a whole collection of minis.
Gotcha.
It was the biggest I have ever seen.
Gotcha. So you did that in the morning.
Yep. After that, I did wand making for wizards, which was strange but fun.
Oh, yeah, your wand was sweet.
Yeah, it turned out really good. I like it a lot.
Yeah, so fun fact, every time I saw that in the hotel room, I thought it looked like a kebab.
Yeah, well, that's fair. It was a stick sticking out of a rolled up piece of foil, so I ate it a couple times.
I thought it was a kebab or an incense stick.
Yeah, but it was a cool class. I liked it. It was in the embassy suites, which took me a long time to find.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not connected by any bridges or tunnels or anything like that. And its entrance is like down an alley.
Well, it's connected via the sky bridge, but you have to go through two other buildings to be able to get to
it. Yeah, it's easier just to walk outside.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I had to go there too. My one of my GM classes was there.
Yeah. Nice hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
That's where it's also where I had the Rustle Your Bustle event last year.
Rustle Your Bustle.
I was in the same room.
Yeah, they typically have all the crafting and medium-sized seminars over there. They have the Writer Symposium is in the Indianapolis Marriott downtown, the place where we stayed.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then they have the escape rooms and the things that aren't your Dungeon Adventure but are, like the LARPing and things like that.
Yeah.
Most of that at the J-Dub. The Just Windows.
Yeah.
Marriott.
Which I went to accidentally the first night. There's two Marriotts. I just followed the sign for Marriott and I was wrong.
Well, you did the wrong one.
I did.
You did the wrong one.
At least I didn't go into someone's room.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank God.
That's right. So you did a bunch of events. I think you you played Call to Adventure, right?
Yes, I did. That was always fun. I feel like I actually understand the game now.
Good.
I played against one of the guys who works there, or a volunteer, and so, yeah, he kicked my butt.
Yep.
But he showed me more like the stuff I didn't understand, and it was cool.
Good.
I like the game a lot.
So it was now you can fun butt kicking.
Now I can teach it.
So you also played in a tournament.
Yeah, so, before that, on Friday night, I did that Death Cup thing, which was super fun.
Oh, right. Yeah. So
it's a quarters dexterity type, overly complicated shrinky game with dice, but very fun. Yeah,
okay. So.
And the cool thing was, all the beers were like nerd named. Like they had Worm's Blood and like the Big Red Giant Ale and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I don't think they normally do that.
Did you see their food?
No. I mean, not with my eyes. That's weird to say. I just sort of walked through the restaurant. I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, so they changed their menu, too.
Okay.
And their menu is all nerdy named.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about that game is there's a point where everyone standing around a large table raises their glasses and yells out, "All hail the Death Cup." And it happens, like, very frequently when you have that many tables there.
Sure.
So I just imagine everyone else eating at the restaurant not knowing what's going on, just hearing all these voices yelling, "All hail the Death Cup!"
Yes.
Like, oh, I don't want to go to the murder room. Let's stay out here.
So that was interesting. So last year, we didn't stay downtown.
Okay.
Right? So we stayed at the airport about 30 minutes away. And I think, you know, we ate downtown a couple times, but not as much as we did this time.
Right.
Obviously. And it's crazy to see, like, the amount of non-Gen Con people just, like, out and about.
Oh, yeah. I think they just, I mean, some people are just people watching.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even in, like, the hotel bar, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it was kind of weird to see, like, you know,
people in suits and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing here?
just, like, very clearly, like, non-gamers, you know?
Right, right.
Like, there were a bunch of authors there, obviously, but there were, at least the first couple days that we were there, there were plenty of, like, business people.
It was also a Wednesday. Like, it was a Wednesday or Thursday.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
People work downtown.
Yeah, but still, like, what what are you doing? Where you're paying $500 a night for a Marriott room?
I think that's if you're one of those people, someone else is paying for you.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. What did you guys do the first day?
On day zero?
On day zero.
Oh, day one. Day okay.
Day zero. What did we do? I think we just chilled. I had driven all day.
Yeah, it was kind of crashed.
So I was kind of tired.
Yeah, Thursday. I mean, we just did. You know, we did the traditional day one running on the nerds.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was in the vendor hall most of the day because that's like my favorite thing to do. I try not to schedule anything for Thursday.
The first day. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a smart way to do it.
Yeah.
And then I tried to hit. Oh yeah, and I had my I got to do like a full demo of Dwellings of Eldervale. Which was so good.
So tell us. So you talked about Dwellings of Eldervale last episode.
Yeah.
Did I assume it lived up to your?
It more than lived up to the hype.
Okay.
There are multiple mechanics, like multiple ways to win, and I ended up like focusing on the engine building.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
Do you guys have that coming in the mail?
So we backed it at the $1 Kickstarter level because the Kickstarter ended last week.
Okay.
But we wanted to maintain access to the Kickstarter pricing. So
when you pop in a dollar, you kind of just watch it?
Yeah, it's kind of like being like, hey, like, I want to get access to this later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the Kickstarter is over. And so now what'll happen is in, they're starting charging. They have to wait 10 days after their campaign ends for Kickstarter to release the funds. And then they'll go into what's called Pledge Manager mode, where everything will, basically their products will get loaded into this online catalog. And then everyone who Kickstarted it, their account gets pulled over with whatever amount they've already paid. And then from there you can select like, you know, what copy of the game you want, you know, if you want any add-ons, if there's any, like, that's where people will buy, like, the upgrades, like the metal coins and minis or whatever.
Add in the expansion.
And that's how you pay for shipping and all that.
Yeah.
So, but that's not fulfilling until next year.
Oh, no,
because
it just finished.
Oh, gotcha. So, what you play was the final product, or still kind of messing with it?
No, they had three prints of quite a bit of stuff, including like the game trays.
Okay.
And it's all really like nice quality. The figures are beautiful.
Yeah, even though it's not, you know, not final.
Yeah.
It still feels good.
Oh, cool.
And it has good table presence too.
Oh no, it definitely does. And I actually really, really like the game trays because everything is like fitted into its spot.
Right.
And it makes the gameplay really, really easy.
Okay. So they're functional game trees.
Absolutely.
They usually are.
Yeah.
Game trees usually have stuff like that makes sense to have.
Yeah, there's been this interesting trend of like, you have to have a game tray, right?
Yeah.
But what is the game tray doing for you?
Right.
They did a lot of stuff where the game trays were just like, better inserts, you know?
Right.
Went back to their roots of the Wasteland Express time with like, Tidal Blades has a bunch of stuff that it uses, including a dice roller, and the board is actually built with game trays, which is cool. Dwellings of Eldervale, all the factions all have individual game trays.
Yep.
So cool. So that's from Breaking Games, coming out sometime next year, I believe Q1 or Q2 of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So about the time we'll be driving back.
Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Exactly.
It'll be another one of the games we're waiting to get home.
That's how it kind of happens, right? So, like, you go and you check out these games, especially ones that are in early prototype.
Right.
Right? And it's like, oh, this game's coming to Kickstarter whenever. You know, and it's probably either it just finished or it's going to wrap up in the next month or so. And then when you come back, they're selling it at Gen Con.
Yep.
You know.
I see.
So,
it was nice, but I did get to, we have quite a few that we got to see, and we're going to be getting them in the next couple of weeks.
Cool.
Like Reavers.
Yes.
Reavers of Midgard looks so good.
Did you get to play it or see it played?
One of the guys, from
Gray Fox.
From Gray Fox was like really nice, and he was setting up the demo area, and I was like, is that Reavers? And he set up the game for me, and and like took me through all the actions and all the steps and like let me play a little bit of a round, and it was really cool. I'm really excited for that game.
Right, that's awesome.
It looks good. I can't remember if we got the map for that or not. I don't think that we did. But,
I don't think so.
The map for Reavers?
The mat. Yeah, the play mat. Yeah. I do think it looks good, though. It looks real good. And it, from what, they didn't sell out, but they only had, like, probably a dozen left out of the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, out of the 9 dozen or so that they brought with them.
But this one you're getting sooner than that.
Yeah, we'll probably get that in, like, the next week.
Oh, okay.
Or so.
Cool.
Same thing with Pearl Brook. Pearl Brook was there, did really well. All their little accessories did well. Surprisingly, Everdell still did well.
Yeah, I saw that set up there.
Yeah.
Still a lot of people around the demo table.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people were around the demo table for Pearl Brook, and they had never heard of Everdell.
I see.
So, Pearl Brook is the expansion to Everdell.
Right. Is it standalone, or is it you need both.
But the one cool thing is that they had all of the upgrades that we had gotten during the Pearl Brook Kickstarter.
Right.
So they had, like, the wooden tree that's, like, fully painted and gorgeous.
Oh, cool. I did not see that.
Yeah.
Steven is very excited about this wooden tree.
Yeah.
Are you getting the tree?
Huh?
Yeah. Are you getting the tree?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we got the tree. So when they first, when they announced it, they didn't quite have it figured out how they were going to do it yet.
Okay.
And they were like, yeah, we don't know if we're just going to, like, laser engrave it or something. And I was like, I don't care. Like, it's going to be there, right? And then they announced maybe a couple months ago that they were doing a fully painted one. It was the first time we'd seen it. And it's gorgeous.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's great. All the pearls feel great. They have a very berry-esque feel to them.
Okay, so they're squishy? Or like a little rubbery?
They're a little rubbery. I wouldn't say squishy.
Gotcha. But would grandma like them?
Grandma would like them.
Oh, no.
And the upgraded twigs are nice, too. So the twigs now...
They don't roll anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good.
It looks like a bundle of twigs, and they have a groove in them so that you can set them down.
I remember the first time we played that, and you gave a bunch of bouncy variant twigs. I'm like, well, looks like I lost everything already.
Yep. And they have the cool open and closed signs. So you know how when you place a building in your city,
yes,
right? And sometimes it has its own placement for a worker on it.
Okay.
Right? But depending, some cards are open to everybody, and some places are closed just to you. Right?
Right.
And the only way to know that is with a tiny little open symbol on the card.
Right. So now they have
these little standees that you can put onto the card that says if it's open or closed.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I need that. I need the visual help.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody does, so that way you don't have to keep track of who has an open building and who doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, so that was Pearl Brook and / Everdell from Starling Games. Pearl Brook is fulfilling now, so likely at your local game store in the next couple weeks.
Very exciting.
And the last one was Artemis Project. So, mm-hmm. Artemis Project is a worker placement game from... Grand Gamers Guild.
That's the one that the guy saw when we were leaving today, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is that you are working in the Arctic, trying to survive and trying to keep your science experiments going. The whole way you do that is with dice worker placement. So as you place dice, you'll be able to activate different actions. As you place actions, you'll be able to upgrade your engine behind it.
Okay.
So your science experiments require a certain number of actions each turn. Well, as you upgrade them, they'll take less and less actions, allowing you to do more things on the board.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It had all my buzzwords, and from what it sounds like, it lived up to the hype.
Yeah, they had a really good reception. Yeah. You know, I talked to Mark, the owner of Grand Gamers Guild, he said they were doing great. So they probably had maybe a dozen, maybe 20.
I got a little confused. What's the theme of this again?
Arctic.
The Arctic. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're exploring the Arctic.
Yeah, exploring the Arctic.
I see.
So, yeah, so that was, I think that's all the Kickstarters that we saw that we had backed.
Coming in.
I think so. Yeah.
We picked up a bunch of new stuff that I'm excited for.
Yeah, we did.
Man,
we have a lot of games.
We have like three duffel bags of board games.
Chris is sharing the back seat with our board game bags.
Than I am. We're not going to go over each of them because
honestly, I don't remember what they are.
Yeah. But probably my favorite pickup of the weekend is Cerebria from Mind Clash Games.
Yes.
Oh, it's not City of the Big Shoulders?
It's not City of the Big Shoulders.
Oh. No.
City of the Big Shoulders looks really, really good.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
So, of course, the game I played is going to be higher up on my
list. Sense. Yeah. What was the game called again?
It's Cerebria. So
Cerebria.
It was on my list. I've been wanting to check it out for a while because I saw the art for it and like fell in love with it.
Oh, I know what this is now.
Yeah.
Tell me more about it.
So we have a rule. Well, a soft rule.
Very soft rule.
But a rule. if a game is more than $60, I want to do like research and try to play it first before I
totally fair.
Before I buy it.
Our game collection has gotten to that point where we need to put a little more effort in before we buy.
I need to get rid of a bunch of stuff myself.
There's a difference of if it's like a small card game or whatever, you know, like a bar type game.
Right.
You know, but like something with heft.
Right.
That you're not going to get to the table all the time.
Exactly. You don't want to just collect. You don't want a heavy dust collector.
Right. Exactly. So Cerebria is from Mind Clash Games. And it's a area control team game.
It is. Yes.
Up to how many players?
It's 1-4.
The base is 1-4, but an expansion adds another team.
Yeah, but it's always going to be 1-4. The expansion adds a third faction that you can pick from.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea is that you are...
Oh, I thought it meant that you could play it like all together.
No.
Okay. Wait, are you absolutely sure? Because it's the third faction is about balance. It's about making sure that either side doesn't get too strong. I'm pretty sure you can play it with up to 6 people.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. So I'm confused. If it's a team game and you have 2 players head-to-head,
mm-hmm.
Yep. If it's 4 players, it's 2v2. What happens if it's 3 players?
You would do 1v2.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine. The person playing 1 would just... Because even when you play 1v1, you still play with 2 characters.
Oh, so there's always 4 things happening.
Yep.
Yep.
So you're playing as emotions,
mm-hmm.
right? In this spiritual world, I guess, or ethereal world.
Yeah. Well, you're playing in a mindscape. You are playing in a blank mindscape, and the area control is you trying to determine the personality of this person.
So it's much more mature inside out.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So in the base game comes the gloom emotions and the bliss emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Each faction, so bliss and gloom, both have 4 different emotions. Okay? And each of those 4 are represented as characters. You pick 2 at the beginning of the game to play with. And those are the 2 that you'll use on the board. They each have unique abilities that might change, but otherwise they're pretty much the same.
Okay.
There's some light deck building as well, depending on your strategy that you do.
Mm-hmm.
But the key part of the game is there are about a dozen actions that you're going to take, 5 of which exist on the board. And depending on if you control them or not, might give you a discount. 4 of which are on your actual player board. And then there's a couple more that are outside that don't cost actions, but are abilities that you're going to use. And all the actions are relatively simple. They're pretty straightforward to, once you see them, you understand exactly what they do.
Yeah.
The complexity in the game comes from the combination and the strategy behind using those abilities.
Okay.
Every turn, you get 3 actions to use. You take your 3 actions, it goes to the other team, and they take a turn, then it comes back to you, back forward, right? So we're zigzagging. So scoring works a little wonky. It's a little complicated, but there's a row of public goals at the top. You have to match, or you're trying to complete the leftmost goal. So, for example, one of the goals might be control more realms than the other team.
Okay.
All right? So, you'll score points based on completing that goal. If you don't complete that goal, when scoring is triggered, scoring is triggered a couple of different ways, but mainly when the willpower from the center of the board has been depleted. The center of the board is a rondelle-type mechanic where the entire center of the board actually rotates around.
That's cool. I saw that.
Yeah,
that's
neat. So once one of those is depleted, if you have not completed your public goal, that actually flips over face down. And so now you have a new public goal. So now the leftmost one is now your newest one.
Very nice.
Yep. And then you also have a secret goal that you're trying to get to, which will get you points as well. You get points for controlling the realm and wherever your characters are and where the willpower was depleted. It took the guy like 25 minutes to explain the game to us.
Yeah. Is it heavy to learn? Or I guess you haven't really played.
There's a lot of abilities, right?
Okay.
So there's a lot of different actions that you can take that all have... They don't have a bunch of rules to them, but there's a lot of things that you... So, like, you can even upgrade your actions.
I see.
Yeah. So there's a lot of paths to go down. But we played a couple of rounds of it, and I feel like we've got
Feel like I got the gist of the game, like, really pretty well.
I only learn games like that by physically doing it.
I'm the same way.
I'll be like, okay, can you start again?
I felt really bad, because he had his spiel down of... teaching the rules, like,
right.
he did it well, but I think I retained maybe 30% of it.
Yeah. And that's normal.
Yeah.
And I was you're gonna learn by doing it.
Exactly.
Any other games that first day or two you got to test out?
Aftermath.
Yeah, and Chris, you got to demo that too, right?
I got to demo it vicariously through someone else.
I was basically just
getting really comfy with a stranger watching them play it, and I am super hyped for it.
Were you sitting on their lap?
Yes. Reversed them.
Oh, okay.
You were just hugging them the entire time.
Yeah, like,
you were there for moral support.
Yeah. You were coffee potting. Yeah, I was coffee potting. But it looks awesome. I'm glad they brought the minis back. I understand why they didn't do minis for Comanox, because that would be like a whole other box of minis, because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see this game. I really, really, really want it, but it's not out yet.
Yeah, so straight to retail in September, I believe.
Free shipping if you order it from their website.
Ooh, that is
very sweet. LifeHackGames.com.
That's it.
The designer was telling us that this Aftermath is significantly simpler than Comanox is.
That's fair. Comanox gets really... Well,
Part of the problem with Comanox is the theme.
Right.
Like, the theme is just... It takes a little bit to wrap your head around the theme.
Yeah. It's a convoluted theme. The rule book is... I think the biggest problem in that game is the rule book, honestly. Because it's like... It explains things poorly.
Yep.
That aren't really that complicated. But to someone who hasn't, like, read a game like this, you're just like, I have no idea what's happening.
Right, exactly.
Once we got it, it's super fun to play. It's easier to teach than it is to read.
I do like that it's 100% card-based.
Yeah, and I like the deck of cards. It looks super sweet.
Yeah, and the character vaults are cool.
Yeah, the little tuck box.
Oh, they are, yeah. I appreciate a good tuck box.
the Storybook game series, I think, is great, you know?
Yeah, I love it. I love how it looks like it's from a mouse perspective, so everything looks generous.
Yeah. The one thing that was interesting to me, so this is obviously an extension of the Mice and Mystics world.
Okay.
So this is after Mice and Mystics, all the humans are gone. So there's another game coming out called Battlelands.
Okay.
Which is Aftermath, but as a competitive 1v1 game.
Oh, so they're just expanding the world of Mice and Mystics?
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly, it's the same universe.
Same exact universe.
Are they
Mice
still...
Mice and Mystics, for some reason, was like more medieval.
It's definitely more fantasy-esque.
Yeah.
But it's
still set in the future.
But it's no, it's present day.
But the humans are all dead.
Well, now they are. In Aftermath, yes.
Oh.
But Mice and Mystics is still present day, where they
It's just magical, like, realism.
Yeah.
Like, modern magical realism.
The whole thing is, like, you're finding goblins in the sewer.
Yeah.
That are mouse-sized?
Yes. Correct. Although the cat mini for Aftermath.
Oh yeah, it's so good. Sweet. And just the minis themselves.
They look, they come shadow.
They're like that. Stinking adorable,
yeah,
too.
They look awesome. Yeah, they are. I'm really excited.
Are they coming with the gloss on them already?
They are. They are coming washed.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Did you see the painted ones that the artist
did?
Yes.
They look so good.
They look great.
Yeah, that was a designer who did them.
Yeah. Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm. It was.
A separate artist.
No. Oh,
that's awesome.
The guy who taught me the game told me, because I wish I would have known that. I would have told him. He did such a beautiful job.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. So the FFG announcement.
Yep.
Or lack thereof.
Right.
Right? So.
It's day one. Day zero.
Oh, what'd we get? We got a new Keyforge set.
Yay.
Surprise. Surprise. No one saw that coming, but no one thought that would be their big announcement.
Right. Honestly, like, when I was going, I mean, there was a lot of Keyforge events, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't huge.
No, but a lot of people aren't coming there to play Keyforge.
Correct. Yeah.
I also think it's much more likely, like, the Magic events do well because it's much more likely for somebody to have a Magic deck swinging on their hip than the Keyforge deck.
That's very true.
They have a new RPG that I can't remember the name of, but none of their RPGs have ever been good, so I'm not particularly looking forward to it. They did have some stuff for X-Wing, which I don't really follow, so...
Yeah, it seems like we're gonna keep doing what we're doing, guys.
Yeah, which is fine, by the way. Yeah.
What they do well.
Yeah, exactly. So, the quote-unquote hot games of the con.
Okay.
They're tied for three of them, and I disagree with one of them.
Okay.
Alright? So, Geek Buzz top three is Black Angel.
Okay. Yep.
Point Salad.
Oh, wow.
And Pipeline.
Pipeline? Okay.
Yep. City of the Big Shoulders made it to the top five. I can't remember if they're four or five.
And this is just one magazine or one?
So this is Geek Buzz. So Geek Buzz is from Board Game Geek.
Okay.
And people at the show...
they vote.
Yep. They vote on what they're checking out, what they're buying, things like that. Black Angel, I saw it. I tried to set it up. I played around. It's very convoluted for what it is.
What's the main premise of it?
So the whole idea is that you have these little robots.
Okay.
All right? And you're on the Black Angel. The Black Angel's a ship.
Right.
And you're heading towards Spez. Okay? Trying to protect it from an alien invasion.
Okay.
All right? Well... to do that, you have to... You're also trying to make friends with all the other aliens in space.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So to do that, you have to complete missions for them.
Okay.
Right? So you might have to complete a pick-up-and-deliver mission, or you might have to spend actions to upgrade their technology.
Okay.
All right? It's all dice-based, so you're rolling dice, and those... Depending on what you roll, determines how many actions you get. The actions all go into what's called the break room of the Black Angel,
mm-hmm.
where anybody can pick actions from the break room. Depending on player order, you'll get to reserve certain die, so that way you're not completely screwed over.
That's fair.
It is marketed as a heavier game.
Okay.
From the looks of it, you wouldn't think that it is. It has a very, like, how do I put this... celestial look?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it almost looks like, it has art very similar to, like, Captain of Set.
Yeah. It's right? Like a schematic kind of, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is it fully cooperative?
No, it's competitive. Yeah.
But are you on the same ship?
You are on the same ship, but you're...
Are you competing for the missions? Like,
yeah.
Who can... Oh, I see.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the reasoning behind that?
We're
all on the same ship. Why would you?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Yeah, I feel like I would need a couple learn to plays before I tried to tackle that.
Exactly. The demos were always hopping, and Thursday and and Friday, people were waiting in line for hours to pick up this game. Like, literal hours. And our buddy Micah picked it up Saturday in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like I said, I took it out of the box. It's one of those things where you're going to have to, like, read that rule book 4 or 5 times to be able to, like, fully understand it. I do think that... I think there's some merit in it. I just hope... I think it's all hype. From what we read, I read the rule book front to back once. And it's the rules are very convoluted, like how they're laid out.
Okay.
On your turn, you can take either sequence A or sequence B, which are both very different, like, things you can do. Like, different varying actions that are available to you. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I truly do think that it's just all hype.
All hype.
I don't think it's anything.
Yeah. So fruit salad, or point salad.
Point salad.
Yummy,
dude,
yummy.
Points. Okay. So I played point salad.
Yeah.
Point salad is the filler weight game for gamers.
Okay.
It is the game that you want to play in between games.
Okay.
So the whole idea is that you are, you're trying to fulfill a grocery basket.
Okay.
All right. Fill a grocery basket. You have to complete these different objectives. And they might be, you know, have 2 carrots and a thing of lettuce, right? The cool thing about the game, it plays in 8 minutes.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Like, it's very fast.
So it's like a nice little refresh between, yeah, you know,
exactly,
your 3-hour games.
Exactly. It's good when you're just, like, waiting for somebody to come in, you know, like, oh, like, we're going to play Food Chain Magnate, but, you know, Chris is 10 minutes late.
That's fair.
Right? So let's whip this out and play it.
Chris is in the wrong hotel.
I'll be right back.
So that came out for board game night, for AEG's board game night.
Yeah.
Sold out the next morning.
Wow.
People were wrapped around both of their gigantic booths, and it sold out.
Just for fruit or point salad.
For point salad.
That's very confusing.
Worth picking up if you can find it. And then third is Pipeline.
Pipeline
is a...
Metro?
Market. It's a Euro, not a Metro.
No, I mean, I thought Pipeline was like the subways.
Oh, no, it's oil.
It's oil.
Oh,
it's
oil. Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole idea is that you're taking lower grades of oil, refining them through your system, and then selling them refined, right? And it is a economical game. Mm-hmm. So if you have to spend money to make money, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the game, if you have the most money, you win.
Yeah,
it's got art by Iuno Tool, so it's absolutely gorgeous. Capstone Games is publishing it. We picked up a copy to check out. We watched part of a demo.
Yeah, and we spectated.
Yeah, and it looked like right up our alley. So you're going to have to check that out. And then, of course, City of the Big Shoulders,
right,
is one of the sleeper hits, I think. You know, heavy games typically don't do super well. Yeah, obviously, it's kind of hard to guesstimate what it is, but right now, I'd probably give it like a 4.25.
Okay.
Somewhere around in that range.
Yeah, it looks pretty heavy.
So, City of the Big Shoulders is a 100% stock market game. If you like the 18XX games, but just want the stock market part, that's what this is.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to get into games just from face value, because, like, when someone's like, oh, do you want to play a game? Do you want to pretend to be a wizard or fight evil? Or would you like to refine oil? So I'm like, well, I'll take the first two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, theme is very important for you.
Yes.
And I respect that, yeah. 100%. For me, the game's got to be good first.
That's fair.
See, I'm all buzzwords. Like, give me your right mechanics, yeah, and I will play it.
Yeah. Speaking of mechanics, Mechanica.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Mechanica from Resonant Games.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, I didn't get to play it.
Super cool.
Man. So, Mechanica, you are, you're controlling a factory.
Oh, so that's a game with the little Roombas, right?
Yep.
Okay. Evil Roombas.
Evil Roombas.
Taking over the world.
Yeah.
The evil air quotes.
Exactly. But the cool, so it's an engine building game. You're trying to make the most money.
Right. Right.
To do that, you have to be able to make the most and the best robots.
Not necessarily the best, because sometimes you want some of the worst so you can build those special robots.
Right, exactly. It all depends. It all depends. But hey, you're buying upgrades for your factory. It might be different modules. It might be a bigger truck. It might be a conveyor belt to make things go faster. It might be
slower.
Yeah. It might be a flinger to skip your machine entirely and throw them into the truck. But the cool thing is, so the market exists in this this circle, right? Mm-hmm. That turns every turn. If you don't buy something by the time it reaches the end of the market, it drops into the box.
Oh.
Yeah, so it puts it away for you.
Yep, exactly.
I like that a lot. My favorite thing about that game, besides the awesome tiny robots, is the bank. So you have this little cardboard box in front of each player where you hide some of the coins that you're earning, mm-hmm. so people can't tell how much money you have. And at the end, you reveal it, and it's all about money. So, okay. Like, Steve and I were playing, and I was going for these big, huge cash bonuses, building these crazy robots.
Yeah.
Whereas he was just gift-wrapping robots and getting little dollars every turn. So after a while, you open it up, and he has, like, a bazillion coins. Yeah. So it's kind of a surprise.
Yeah. The game was super fun. It's currently on pre-order. They did a Kickstarter for it and ran into some problems that we actually found out. So all the factory modules are little puzzle pieces, but they're not cut from a single sheet.
Right.
So they had to. It took some time for them to figure out exactly how to get them to fit well together, because puzzles are typically all done from just a single sheet and they cut them.
So yeah. When they're making the puzzle, no other piece should fit with any other piece. That's how the puzzle is designed. So when they built this one, they want every piece to fit with its other pieces. So like gotcha. Literally the opposite of the way the machine's supposed to work.
Exactly. So yeah, so that's going to be out in the next month or so, I believe, from Resonim Games.
So that was the first 2 days. Saturday, I spent the entire day walking around the game hall and playing a ton of Dice Throne.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was your tournament.
Talk to us about Dice Throne.
Well, Dice Throne. I was talking to the guy from Warcraft Games, and he was running a pre-qualifier for Dice Throne. So he's like, I kind of get you in if you want to play. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. Sure. So I played, and I won my first three games.
Nice. Very nice.
Because some of those guys were like really into Dice Throne.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And
I love that game, man.
Oh, I love it too. It was really weird because I haven't played season one in so long.
Right.
So they mix both seasons together and you're randomly given a faction.
Right. Okay.
And so when I was given like the Pyromancer from season one, I'm like, this looks strange. You know, the board's all funky and all the icons look different. So it was a little confusing back and forth. Oh, and then so I won, and then I got to meet the artist Manny. He was really cool, and he signed our playmats and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Come back in five for the finals." And they had this giant statue of I guess he's the Dice King. Yeah, giant statue of him. And he's like, "So everybody, look. This is what was his name? Kenny Forbes. He's the reigning champion, and apparently hasn't lost a game of Dice Throne in 2 years.
Oh my god!
At least professionally, like in the circuit,
right.
Or whatever. And so the pairings came up. He's like, "All right, Chris, you're fighting him." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." The first roll of the game, he just picks up the dice, rolls a large straight, no rerolls. He's like, "Yeah, well, let's start." Like,
oh my god!
And then the next turn, he rolls like one away from an ultimate. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna mess him up." So I tip one of his dice, get him out of thing, and he plays two wilds, and this ultimates me like second turn.
Wow.
Like, well,
jeez.
Like, wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you use Oligarch?
No. He just flicked me off. No, he was really nice. He's like, "I don't know what to tell you. It's luck." I'm like, "It's luck."
You tell him to play the lottery.
Yeah. No, he wants to play Dice
Throne. He just wants to play Dice Throne.
But it was super fun. Super fun to play that game. Again, play characters I don't normally play.
What did I do? I did the hall. Mm-hmm. We played Cerebria on Saturday. What did you do, Angel? You had your GM class. How
I did
that?
Have my GM class. It was super cool. So I'm trying to get, like, I'm getting into GMing. I've never done it before, but I am very much interested in it. And they had classes on world building. And the teacher, like, taught this class by making us pick an object and build our world around it. And it made you ask questions you never would have thought of asking. Because, like,
okay.
it's how do your characters interact with this object? What does it do for them? How does it change the world around it? Like, and you just have to, like, build upon that and build upon that. It's building a world by, like, looking at the most narrow point and then opening up. That's yeah. Cool. I really liked it.
That's cool. That's super cool. So, do you have plans for building your own world?
maybe not the one that I did, because mine was a newspaper clipping, and it got, I don't know, it wouldn't really work in like the D&D setting, and that's what I want to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. Like, the core of what I learned is definitely transferable.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It was a really good, it was probably one of the best classes I've taken at Gen Con.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Saturday, I did the hall. Again.
Yeah.
I played a bunch of games, just like demoing stuff. I checked out, that was when I checked out Aftermath, and I checked out the, what is it, Into the Black Forest.
Oh yeah, that game looks so cute.
Yeah, Into the Black Forest is it's a trick-taking game, from Into the Black Forest is a trick-taking game from Green Couch Games. the whole idea behind it is each round there's a different scenario card.
Okay.
And each side of the card has different requirements in game.
Yeah, so, exactly.
With a super cute theme. Like, yes. Very good for on the go.
And if you win a round, you get the little pig.
The Black Forest ham.
The black,
that's so true.
that you can use to protect yourself in future rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a cute little game.
There's a couple games that, like, really got me in theme, and that's, like, Beecraft's my eye first, obviously. But when I went to check it out, I'm like, no, I don't really like it. Like, that Homebrewers game sounds, like, right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I played it, I'm like, oh, this is all, like, math and money and counting, and I'm not into any of that.
Right.
So I was like, eh. And then I really thought I would like Battle of the Bards, but I did not like it at all.
Oh, that's a
shame. Why didn't you like it?
It's boring. It's like, I don't know, how do I describe it? Like, you're hiring musicians.
Okay.
And you're collecting dice and rolling them and using those dice to buy audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And those audiences are worth points, and then if whoever gets to four audience, or, you know, cards, ends the game, and that's it. It's just very... I think it was the lack of interaction.
Oh, that's actually... There's a game that was on my list, Mezzo.
Yeah.
Which I thought the theme was going to... Like, the theme drew me in. It's like area control skirmish, like, based off of, like, Mayan mythology.
Yeah.
And Mayan gods. But I played it, and it's kind of like a simpler Blood Rage.
Okay.
And I can see what... I think some people are really going to like it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted more interaction.
Yeah.
And it wasn't giving it to me.
Yeah,
like, it was well designed, but me as the type of gamer that I am...
Sure.
I wanted it to be heavier and more, like, I needed more options.
I don't think it helped that you played that after you played Cerebria.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Like, Cerebria has a lot of interaction happening with it.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, that's the other thing too. That's the other thing too.
Oh no!
Because like, I was playing games. I'm like, oh yeah, it's kind of like this game, but I'd rather play this game.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not gonna buy another. I need to narrow it down. I can't have so many games that are too similar.
No. Exactly.
Oh, sleeper game, Fluttering Souls.
Oh yeah.
We didn't play it till today, and it's the perfect little baby of Seven Wonders in Sushi Go, and I loved it.
Nice. Each round plays in, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is great. And it's from our friends at Good Games Publishing.
It's two players only, correct?
Two players only, yep. And I think that makes it better.
Yep.
You know? And it's only 3 minutes long, so you're rolling through it. And it's, like, $13, $15, something like that.
Yeah.
So, it's fun. It is exactly what Angel said.
Right.
Yeah.
Seven Wonders Duel. And Sushi Go. Made a baby.
And it was perfect.
And it was a butterfly.
a perfect little butterfly.
I was really excited for Terror from Below. And then when I saw it played, I was done.
Yeah, so you didn't actually play it,
I did not physically play it. Okay. I watched a demo for a long time, and I saw the basics of it.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I think I watched a demo for like 10 minutes.
I'm just like, you're just moving eggs, driving cars, and that's it.
Yeah.
I was also disappointed that, so it doesn't come with a giant worm figure. You have to buy that separately. It's part of an expansion.
Right.
They just have these cardboard standees that are that go around it, these big things. And I was talking to guys that were playing it, like when they bought it, they're like, yeah, the big worms don't do anything. They're literally background pieces. Like,
oh, really?
They do nothing.
Oh.
They're not involved in the game at all.
So the expansion is just a plastic worm?
No, apparently it adds some more stuff to it. I didn't look into the expansion, but they had the plastic worm on the table. He's like, yeah, he sort of sits here.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, so you're just playing with eggs.
I wonder if that was like a lack of knowledge thing.
Could have been.
Yeah.
But I definitely never saw any of those standees do anything but stand around the table.
Dude, that is my one complaint this year. Is this year, much more than last year, is people demoing games like didn't have a clear understanding of the game.
Mm. Oh, really?
Probably you mean the volunteers.
I didn't really run into that problem a lot.
I ran into it three separate times.
Okay.
With three different companies.
And that's the, you know, I understand with heavier games that you're going to forget some rules and you're going to need to refer to the rule book, but there's a difference between someone who has a good spiel and someone who actually can teach you.
Right. And not to put her on blast, but she was also a little shy and like...
Yeah, and you gotta be loud in that hall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Loud, and I am not very good hearing. So
you have to be loud and confident.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, think of it this way, right? Yeah. Like, I enjoyed the game. It wasn't great, but I enjoyed it, right?
Yeah.
Had she provided some more confidence, I probably would have bought it.
So she's getting, you know, the first line of sales.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
That's probably why I got the Die Hard game so quickly, is because the guy teaching it, that was the best demo experience I had.
Right.
The whole con.
Yeah.
There's a sign-up sheet, so you come back at your allotted time.
Right.
You come sit down, and the guy's like, all right, here we go. So here's John McClane on the roof. I want you to draw this card. And he stacks the deck. He's like, now put it down. Move. Shoot. Do that. Now go do these other three turns on your own. Just copy the same thing. If you run into any problems, I'm right here.
If any demo is longer than 20 minutes, they should have a sign-up sheet.
I really agree, because Dwellings did sign-up sheets, and I was like, this is genius. Because I wanted to demo Mezzo all con, like the entire con, and I didn't get to do it until this morning.
Right.
And I get it, right? I get it for, like, you know, for the small little, like, 10-minute card games, or, like, games where you're playing, like, one round, I get it.
If you're going to sit down at a table, there probably should be a sign-up sheet.
Right,
exactly. If you're going to stand at those little, like, kiosks on the side, then you're good.
Yeah, totally fine. But like Cerebria, we just happened to walk up as they were finishing up a demo.
Yeah. We literally slid right in.
Had that not happened,
never would have played it.
Yeah, never would have played it and wouldn't have bought it.
Yeah.
You know? Glad we did.
Yeah, me too. I'm very happy with my purchases.
Yeah.
My guilty pleasure game that I'm really excited to play is that Fuzzy Mage fight. It looks so damn cute. Like, so the character cards are, like, huge. They're, like, box size. They're adorable. And the other side is, like, the spirit version of when they die. But the thing is, when you're dead, you're not... Well, when you're an essence, right?
Okay.
You're not out of the gate. You have to do something called... you have to create an alliance with another dead character.
Okay.
And then you both come back to life when you're linked together.
Oh.
And if either of you attack the other person, then that person turns back to essence and you stay alive.
Okay.
But the problem is, you can only win as long as you're not linked to someone.
Interesting.
So eventually, you're going to work together, but eventually one of you is going to have to...
You're going to have to sever it. Wow.
And the other cool thing about that game is there's this creature called, like, the Gribbon or something. It's a weird gremlin creature. It's a big card. And it's not a first player marker. It's like a hot potato. So it stays with you, and you have to feed it cards. You have to discard two.
Okay.
And you want to get rid of it, pass it down the table to screw over your friend who also has to do it.
That sounds
good. So
there's
these little fuzzy creatures literally stabbing each other in the back. It's like my two favorite things. Can't wait.
My guilty pleasure.
Oh, I definitely have one.
What's your guilty
pleasure? I don't know if it's guilty, but I bought... oh my god, Zodiac Clash.
Oh yeah,
and
that's so pretty.
I bought it strictly based on aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's foiled. There's, like, beautiful astrology signs and, like, moon phases and it looks like a three-tiered astrology foiled cake, and so I bought it immediately.
It looks like it's something I would have out all the time.
Yeah.
Just because it looks so decorative.
And it's a little like Santorini. Yeah. It's just abstract strategy, only takes 30 minutes, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited to check it out, honestly.
It looks really cool. I mess with it, but I didn't demo it. I just played it, like, the pieces and read through the rules.
So my guilty pleasure, much to a few people in our group chagrin, is the Transformers TCG.
Oh, yeah?
So I demoed that today, and let me tell you, it's most likely nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But it just feels so good.
Okay.
Like, you got the Soundwave deck, and I'm like, I'm going to play twice.
Soundwave and Blaster.
Yeah, I can't play. Soundwave's where it's at.
Yeah. Okay. So... I'm excited to play that. I'm not going to go deep into it. You know, I got a starter
dual decks.
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah, exactly. I didn't get the Destructicon one. I thought about it, but
that's the big green one.
Yeah,
that opens up into this shiny page-sized card.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of it's a TCG, right?
Yeah.
So you can do the whole lottery thing, but I do the two decks. I'll see if I go anywhere with it.
Right.
But. If nothing else, it's just a cool little combat game to have.
Yeah.
Super cool. Apparently, I was not going to get back into TCGs, but apparently I have to play Doomtown now. I have a pro Doomtowner.
Doomtown is not a TCG. It is a CCG.
Collectible.
Yeah, correct.
What's the difference?
A trading card game.
Yeah.
The booster packs that you get are randomized. In a CCG or an LCG, they're interchangeable. You know exactly what you're getting.
I see.
So I buy a pack of cards.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what cards are in there.
So you pick out the random.
Yep. Exactly. That was Gen Con 2019.
Wow.
I need a 3-day nap.
Yeah. No,
but I'm already waiting for next year.
Yeah. You should create a game where you go to a con and you have to collect all the different games. And that's your game.
Yeah, it's called Debt. there's that one person that we saw that like bought literally every game.
Literally.
Oh my god.
Like bought like Emotep and King Domino.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Like, why you came to Gen Con and bought that?
Maybe they're like have never seen a board game before.
Real quick. Okay. Real quick. We bought Island of Eldorado finally.
Finally.
Nice.
We played it for the first time like months ago, and we finally got it.
Oh god, the game is so great. It's so wonderful. The guys at Eldorado Games were fantastic and kind of gave us the walkthrough, gave us some sneak peeks at the upcoming expansion that's coming out. So super sweet. Check out Island of Eldorado. It's a tile placing dungeon crawler. You're trying to get all the shrines from this island, and then you have to get the final one, which is inside of a cave, and you have to Indiana Jones out of there. So yeah, it's a wonderful game. It's pretty too. The comes in this really nice hefty box with a magnet on it. Magnetic closure. Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet. So check that out.
Very cool. All right, well, we'll definitely have some new games to play in our upcoming episodes. Until next time, bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Table Hops Podcast. Be sure to visit us at tablehopspodcast.com, leave us an iTunes review, or visit us on social media at Table Hops Podcast.
Be sure to check out our videos on YouTube and email us your feedback and questions to tablehopspodcast@gmail.com.
And remember,
good beers,
good games,
great times!